Hello. Welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, listeners, to episode 44 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast by seekers and for seekers. I've got a couple of shout-outs today. One is to Mimi Rose, and the other is to Lienke Giba. And if I pronounced that wrong, I'm really sorry. I tried hard.
Let me holler and say, too, hey, glad Kirk's recovering from major surgery. Tawana recovering from surgery. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I was trying to think. There was somebody else I was going to say. Oh, yeah. Let's remember Shauna. She's going through a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Always remember her as you think about this. Okay. Is it me? Last episode was on Halloween and the customs and traditions surrounding the celebration. Now, even if we aren't sure what we're celebrating, Halloween has become an American tradition, with Americans spending in excess of $9.1 billion. That makes it, as far as I can find, the most we spend on a single one-day holiday.
That still blows my mind.
But, you know, if you go in a Halloween store, you can start to believe it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, in this episode, it's just going to be a two-segment episode, and we are going to talk about fear, all right?
Fear.
The definition we have of fear is an unpleasant feeling that's triggered by the perception of danger, whether real or imagined.
So let's start off with, fear is designed into us for self-preservation. And let's talk about the positive effects of fear. If no one experienced fear, what might be the result?
I shudder to think about how fear as a kid, fear preserved me a bunch of time.
Right? Was it fear of your mama, though?
No, it was just the fear. This might not end well.
Did you know that's an actual thing? There is a rare disease that causes you to not be afraid of anything.
I actually got caught up looking.
Yeah, it's called, really? Stuff on it's, that. It's called Erbach-Wiethe disease. And basically, and I'm not...
What is it like? Is it chemical related?
Or it's
what
a is, genetic or,
it's a genetic, and you have these two little almond-shaped structures on each side of your brain, and they're called the amygdala. Uh-huh. And those are kind of like your emotional control sensors. And when certain things happen to those, it can... And there was actually a lady... I didn't write her name.
She was
down,
still alive.
She's still alive, but she had. It was like they took her into a place with like poisonous snakes and stuff, and she knew that she didn't want to touch them, but curiosity overcame her. She felt no fear of.
So she was. Can I hold one of them?
Yeah, I've learned. Let's end the program. I've learned something.
There you go. And I started watching. It's actually, there is a bacterial disease that can cause the Erbach-Wiethe disease in rats.
Oh.
And I started watching some videos. It's really prominent in Brazil.
I have seen that, where the rats jump on cats.
Yes, and they will chase them down and attack them. And it really fascinated me.
When you said that, see, because that video caught my eye was that rat attacking a cat. Is it me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it fair to say that there is a healthy fear?
I think so.
That we need a healthy perception of danger?
I mean, we teach it to our kids when they're little. Don't touch that stove because
it's
you
hot.
Know, or don't go too deep in the water because you know.
So. Well, and now there are, I'm going to just throw this in for our reincarnation folks. A lot of people believe that our deep phobias, which we're going to talk about that in a in the next little bit. Mm-hmm. But they believe they're linked to something that happened to us in a former life. Now, some of these people have a deep fear of flying or have mm-hmm. And they figure out, you know, well, we've talked about that in our reincarnation episode when we talked right. about the little kid that was afraid he'd have the nightmares about flying and stuff. And
well, and I wanted to
I'm not saying that I'm a reincarnation. I'm just saying they believe that their belief is that from the former life, we carry over fears.
Sure.
I can
of
see,
something that
yeah.
happened
they,
to us.
And they actually believe that like our fear of fire and things like that actually come from, it's been such a prominent fear for so many generations that it's actually in our genetics now to have those fears.
Oh, wow.
But I thought an interesting thing, because I was going through and reading tons of stuff mm-hmm. on fear, and one of the interesting things about fear, I'm going to use this example because we live here in an area with a really large deer population. Have you ever had a deer jump out in front of you and your body reacts to that in your vehicle before your mind can even tell you it's a deer? Mm-hmm. You've already hit the brakes and slowed down and maybe swerved the opposite direction, and your conscious mind still hasn't even registered what the danger is.
Right. Okay, so when might fear become unhealthy? Phobias, which by the way comes from phobos, I'm mm-hmm. guessing, one of the Greek words used in the New Testament that is translated fear. Can fear be unhealthy?
Well, of course it can. It's just, there are people that just, I mean, phobias comes from, of course, like you said, phobos. And so there are so many phobias. You know, what about the people that are just afraid to leave their home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where it becomes.
And that has to be a crippling.
Well, sure it is. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not certainly not making fun of it.
No,
I mean,
and let's be realistic. Mom has a arachnophobia that is horrible. I've seen her almost hurt herself multiple times over a harmless spider
she could just put her foot on.
I've got a friend that he's just so phobic of being wasp stung, and he's not allergic to them as far as that, but and he jumped off a ladder and like killed himself because wasp, you know, instead of
swatting on me.
Well, he just jumped off the ladder because he got in a nest of them. But
well, I also have a degree of astrophobia, which is a fear of thunderstorms.
I was thinking you fear of going into space.
I have a little bit of that too. Yeah. But I am terrified of thunderstorms to the degree that I can't sleep through one. If it starts thundering, I'm up and I'm awake for the duration.
Well, that
of
could
the storm.
Be because we live in like Tornado Alley too.
I think a lot of it is. But what about other disorders that are related to fear, like anxiety? I mean, psychological research does claim that there's a connection here, and as someone who suffers from anxiety,
And anxiety is probably not linked to a particular fear. It's just fear that something, it's that feeling of fear, right? How do we, you know,
it's an
unpleasant
feeling
triggered by a perception of danger, real or imagined, and that's the key. That's the key.
And some of us, like me, are really good at knowing everything that can go wrong before we do it. I mean,
and sometimes I'm always well-versed I don't even know what could go wrong. I'm just scared of it.
Well, research tells us that fear has a much deeper effect on us than the mere emotional response. That it actually has a physiological effect on our brain that causes the release of all kinds of endorphins and hormones and chemicals that are intended to be physically consumed in our fight or flight response to true danger. Now, remember, this is true. Of course, when there's true danger, we work that off. Snake!
Yes.
And we jump high and we run and we do all these things. And
it's
then
like Tracen was talking. You react before you really even know
and that's
what,
a true
what you're reacting
fear
to.
Reaction. That's mm-hmm. what fear is designed to do. So keep that in mind.
Right. Okay, so how does our society use fear to manipulate the masses?
In every way.
Do they use politics? Do they use fear in politics?
On one side, if you elect that side, this bad thing's mm-hmm. going to happen. If you elect that person over there, this bad stuff is going to. I mean, it's a fear. It's fear mongering.
Yeah. And news media is constantly bombarding you with the last big disaster that happened and the one that's coming to a town near you.
I was reading about that, and you know what they say that the hierarchy of news programming is: if it bleeds, it leads.
Yes.
Your news, your top story is going to be whatever.
The worst
you can.
Yeah.
And it's fear-based, and it's because they want you to, they want to grab your attention, and then they want you to, they want to persuade the viewer that the solution for reading or for reading the Identified Fear was going to be next. You know, you get those teasers when you're it's just, but it's all based on fear.
Can we go ahead and mention those horrible life insurance commercials?
Oh my goodness.
Marketing. Where the neighbor has passed away and it left their family in a dire situation. Yeah. Those are just horrible. And like Tabby said, there's always a solution at the end of the commercial.
You know, Alan doesn't have any life insurance. Not Tawana's going to have it. I'm really concerned that I might be just like Peggy, whose husband just died.
How has the term terrorism, which has an implication of extreme fear in its title, affected our society in the past 20 years?
That's the whole idea. I'm just going to say this, and this is closer you're going to get, because I'm not talking about a particular brand of politics.
Right.
I'm just talking about this. Terrorism is a politician's dream in many ways, because it's so unknown. You can have a war here that can never be won. So the war can go on forever. Funding can go on forever. You can ask for $1 trillion to fund this, but we can't really tell you why, because it would be giving away our secrets of how we're going to. And this goes on. How long has this been going on?
Years.
Back in Ronald Reagan, we had the first terrorist attack, wasn't it, during the Reagan years? And then it just kept escalating.
Well,
and it became,
so
we just use terrorism.
You have homegrown terrorism. You have worldwide international terrorism. And like you said, it's a never-ending cycle. And as far as the effects it has on people, I can't think of anyone I've spoken to in recent years who isn't at least afraid to some degree to go to a big festival or concert or open venue.
And the people for the people who fly. Their life has changed dramatically. Can we say, we're saying it's a whole lot safer now than it was. It's a whole lot safer now than it was. But, I mean, because nothing's really happened.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And anyway, that's enough of that. But I'm just saying this terrorism thing is really a politician's dream. Now, fear's always been used to divide people. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, is it fair to say that fear is the fuel for racism?
Yeah,
and hate of people who are different from us.
100%.
Now, hasn't this tactic been used over and over to single out and persecute people throughout the ages? You guys probably—I don't know if you've ever read about it. As late as the 1940s, we took all Orient descent people that we thought were Japanese and we put them into concentration camps here in America.
Wow!
Did you know that?
I did. It was World War I, correct? Or World
Two.
War II?
World War II. After the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And then, so it's as late as the 1940s. We actually... And so listen, some of these people, I've read some of their stories. They were business owners in America. They were second generation in America.
Yeah.
Born Americans. They were of American descent. I mean, as far as being on this soil when they were born. Business leaders, stuff like that. And we just rounded them up because they looked like...
I just recently listened to a podcast about some people who had been in one of those, and it was actually the concentration camp they had been put into, or internment camp. They called them internment camps. Was in Jerome, Arkansas.
Really?
Yeah, and it was really interesting.
I did read that
there was
one, and it was the Japanese, right? It was
a Japanese
internment camp.
Okay, so let's use the definition of fear, which I'll remind you again. It's an unpleasant feeling triggered by the perception of danger, either real or imagined. Do you think that man's misuse of this natural defense mechanism may be a contributing factor to all the emotional and mental disorders that we experience?
Guys, fear is exhausting.
It is.
Well, and like you said, and not to mention the physical.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard a person say this, and actually he was a guy speaking, he was a preacher speaking, but he said, when we sit and watch something on television that makes us afraid, our brain is saying, be afraid. React. We need to fight. It's fight or flight.
Yes.
But you're sitting there in a sedative state. So everything that's released, the body has to absorb that somehow. The organs have to absorb that rush of adrenaline. And you say, oh, but it's not the same. Yes, it is. The brain perceives it according to experts.
It does.
The brain just knows one thing. Fear release all of this stuff into the body.
So... I mean, guys, we are always subconsciously bombarded with fear tactics that are intended to get us to act on something to relieve that unpleasant feeling that's been triggered.
Right.
Let's take into account that our brain does not distinguish between true and perceived dangers. And when we don't use up all the chemicals and hormones designed to get us that increased physical strength, it can really have an adverse effect on our physical and mental health, with things such as when I was doing some of my reading, I found out that because belly fat is a big thing, and we know that the hormone cortisol is responsible for a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that fight or flight response, that adrenal can actually cause your body to produce excessive amounts of cortisol.
Well, and it's stress is mm-hmm. comes from the same. Stress is exactly connected yes. to fear. Fear and stress come from the same source, and the right. brain reacts the same way to stress as it does to fear. Because stress is really, I'm afraid I'm not going to get this done. I'm not going to pass this test. I'm not going to yes. make mm-hmm. the. I'm going to get fired. I'm going to be one of the people that get laid off. You know what I'm saying? It's right. the same. It's the same thing.
So with that thought, let's conclude part one and return with part two of this two-part episode on fear.
All right, welcome back to segment two of, what is this, episode 46?
44. 44.
Yes.
We can't count.
Okay. All right. Segment two of episode 44 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast by Seekers and For Seekers. And today's topic is that old enemy, fear. Mm-hmm.
In segment one, we defined and pointed out the purpose of fear, which is to preserve our life, and how that response has been manipulated by triggering fear to get us to purchase, vote, get involved with a movement, or even develop division and hate.
And if you'll send Tabby $15.99, she can tell you how to avoid. No, I'm just kidding, guys.
We'll give you the formula.
There you go. In this segment, the second segment, let's talk about all of this talk about fearing God. This may just be the oldest form of manipulation there is. And again, it seems to be developed by man to control the masses, and I absolutely despise the phrase "fear God."
Well, and let's admit, it's all through the Bible.
It is
fear God. I mean, fearing God is the beginning of wisdom. We've got all those verses that we have,
which is probably one of the most quoted Bible verses.
And it is, but the idea is that, well, we're going to talk about it. We're just going to break that down. Okay, the hard questions. There's two of them. Can fear develop love?
No.
Does fear develop love? And does God want our fear or our love?
I believe
if fear doesn't develop love, then which does he want?
Right.
Does he want our fear or our love? And we're going to talk about that.
Has anyone ever heard of Stockholm Syndrome? That's what I think of with the fearing God, is when you are so afraid of something for so long that you start to associate yourself with it. Because your mind can no longer react any other way.
But that's still not real.
That's not,
it's not a love. Real love. It's an emotional disorder.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's when I know I could think of some people off the top of my head that are maybe close to suffering from that. Mm-hmm.
Well, all of us in this room have been told, and probably all of you out there at some point have been told, that you need to, quote, fear God.
That's what's wrong with this world. Mm-hmm. We're not fearing God.
This is a primitive concept that was developed by the early Hebrew tribes shortly after they fled Egypt. Why important? Because for 400 or so years, this is the only perception of the gods that they knew. Angry, unappeasable gods that demanded more and more sacrifice and were never totally satisfied with any sacrifice, and childlessness, illness, famine, war, and even poverty were all perceived as a result of this unappeased God.
And if you want to see this all wrapped up into a nice little box, read the book of Job.
Yeah.
When his friends are talking to him, that is...
And let me just go ahead and say, I can remember preachers saying from the pulpit, they'd preach on tithing, mm-hmm. and they would use the phrase, well, people ask me why I tithe, well, I'd be afraid not to tithe. Now, what is that saying?
Yeah. God's if you tithe, something good's going to happen if you don't.
God's happy. God's happy if you're giving your money. God's happy. But then tithing's not enough, is it?
No.
See, never. It's never enough, is it? In this fear, the way, if you're serving by fear, I had a little bit about, maybe I'm not, maybe I need to give to this mission over here too. Maybe I need to do this. Maybe I need, because, you know, and we associate, I'm just saying that.
Right.
Well, and this is a good place to point out, It is possible that the reason we have so much problem sorting out and understanding the Bible is that we overlook the humanity or the human contribution. We've been brainwashed into the mindset that the Bible itself is purely divine, so we completely discount the humanity involved. And we can thank Rob Bell, who is one of my favorite authors, for this observation.
Yeah, well, really. the reality of all of this is that the one statement that stood out in my mind that I read of Rob Bell's is, until we see the humanity, we must first see the humanity in the Bible. In other words, realize that this came to us through other human means.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's how God intended for this to be brought to us, is through other human beings. And so thus, it has humanity attached to it. And their fears, mm-hmm. all of their things, their cultures, everything spoke to how they perceived God.
One of my favorite Rob Bell quotes is, real people in real places going through real things at a real point in time. And if you can remember that with everything you read in the Bible, you'll start to see the humanity and the divine.
Well, we're probably going to do an episode on this, so people, because it's hard to just, this concept just in passing. But what I have found to be true about this is that we don't say Paul said, or we don't say Jesus said, or we don't say Moses said. What do we say?
The Bible says.
Mm-hmm. The Bible. See, we don't see the humanity.
I've never even thought about that before, but you are so right.
We don't use the humanity. We don't see, because now if I said Paul, if right now you told me, Trayson said, okay, I'm going to take into consideration who Trayson is. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take her integrity. I'm going to take everything. As you're saying that, identifying, you notice we don't do that with the Bible?
We don't
identify the person
who
wrote this down or said this. We just, all we do is, and I know I'm off on a rant,
but that's
here.
A good illustration.
No, it is.
But we don't do that. We often just say the Bible. So when we say Bible, we're making the connection that God said it, right? Uh-huh.
Yes.
That there's no humanity involved.
Right.
But anyway, we tend to forget that even though the Bible's supposed to point us in the direction of the divine, those directions came to us through real flesh and blood human beings who lived in and were influenced by the society and culture in which they existed. They may have been inspired, but they were still human. Now remember, this is all connected to fear, because this is the way the early Israelites, the people who got the law, they came as they first mm-hmm. were encountering God as a group of people. They came out of Egypt where all these angry gods, mm-hmm. all gods were angry.
Right.
That's
okay, so as pointed out, when approached rationally, one can easily see how 400 years of culture could not be wiped out by a few weeks or even years of activity in the wilderness. So although God was divinely interacting with these people, they were interpreting and comprehending his divine actions through the lens of what they understood about God's.
That's right.
And that was that they are angry and unappeasable. They demand more and more sacrifice, and all ills of life are connected to unhappy, fearful gods.
And I have to be so careful not to fall back into that myself.
Well, yeah. It's hard to get that train off the track.
It is.
It's hard to get that train derailed, yeah.
So let's ask a question here.
Which was our first question.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's our first question. Can or does fear develop into love? Is there any situation we can think of where the object of our intense fear becomes the object of our devoted love, especially in relationships?
And we're speaking in relationships, and that's what we're talking. Does it? Let's just ask the question. Can I hold a gun on you and make you love me?
No.
With threat of death, can I make you love me?
No.
With threat of harming your family, can I make you love me?
You can make me pretend.
Okay,
well,
we're going to talk about that too. But yeah, but I can't get your heartfelt devotion, right?
No.
Because it's always fear. Fear and love. In fact, why do you think one of the writers of the New Testament said, and maybe even Jesus said it, that love overcomes all fear?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean with God too?
Yes.
I would think so.
I would think it would have to. Is it fair to say that if we developed an intense fear of something, as long as we harbor that fear, we cannot truly love that person? We are substituting some perverted emotion for love, right?
I think so.
Are you guys familiar with Brené Brown? She's an author and a
I thought she said
speaker.
Renee Brown. I said, I know, I do.
Renee.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I've heard an interview with Oprah.
Yeah.
Okay.
She does several of those, but I read a book by her recently. And one of the lines in the book was, "True love demands vulnerability. If I am too afraid of you to be vulnerable, I can never truly love you."
So that's really what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. All of this fear God. You people, we're going to hell in a hand. You people are, you know, all of this fire, hellfire and brimstone. And then we say, because God loves you.
Yes.
Yeah.
We end it.
So if God wanted to frighten us, couldn't he do that supernaturally?
I think he could.
I mean, let's be realistic. Would he have to use the threat of natural things to scare us?
Can you imagine that if you sinned too many times, you just turned into a ball of dust and floated into the wind? That would put some fear in you if that's what God wanted to do. But, you know, another thing that I was looking at is, because when we're talking about fear developing into love, I always go back to victims of domestic violence.
Yeah.
And when I started reading into things like battered spouse syndrome, they said that it literally becomes an addiction in the body and the mind to try and measure up to the impossible standards of the abusing spouse. And is that not almost what we try to do with God?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It really becomes a disorder.
It does. Folks.
It becomes a disorder, and a disorder we have toward God, I believe. But 10 kind of clears this up too.
Would it surprise us to learn that when people wrote about God, they spoke of how fearful he is? But when God divinely encountered mankind, the first words were, "Fear not."
That's right.
He said it to Moses, Abraham, Isaac, Joseph, Daniel, David, and almost every other person who had divine angelic contact. The first words were, "Fear not." Jesus even used the phrase,
"Fear not, little flock." Mm-hmm. He said, now, why do you think that is? Why? If God desires our devotion out of fear, why not scare the heck out of us every time we encounter him? Yet, he never did that.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. Do y'all think maybe he was trying to stop the fear?
Of course. He knew man had developed this phobic impression of him. And that's why he would have to say, "Don't be afraid. I'm not here to kill you. I'm not here to."
And that's when I go back to that Brené Brown.
Not here
Brown
to give you cancer.
Quote of this, how can we have an intimate, vulnerable relationship with him if we're still afraid to go to him and say, "Okay, you know everything within me."
Right. So someone will say, what about the encounter with God on Mount Sinai in the wilderness? Well, from the perspective of the Egyptian refugees, the Hebrew slaves, whose expectation was to be wiped out by a god at any moment, it was probably quite horrific. But why wasn't Moses afraid? He actually is the only one who went to the mountaintop and interacted with God. And did Moses come back down frightened and trembling?
I think Moses came down elated.
His face wasn't white with fear. Like, you know, it was, you remember, his face was bright with it. It was bright because he had been in the presence of God. And I realize, you read that story and he says, well, the people were told, don't touch the mountain. You will surely, you know, don't, you're going to die. And there was that. And they heard the voices and the thunderings, and they were even so afraid. They told Moses, said, next time God wants to say something, let him tell you and you tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to go through that experience again.
So in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15, Paul declares, Christ is the visible image of the invisible God.
Now think about that for a moment. What does that say? Christ is the visible image of the invisible God.
Which means he is what you can see of the unseen.
He is our interpretation of who God is.
Mm-hmm. And we believe that Paul made this statement to set aside all the terrifying and primitive ancient traditions about the character of God. In other words, if you want to know who God really is and what he really desires, what his intentions and desires for humanity are, reference Jesus.
Amen. Now, Jesus is our human demonstration to set the record straight on who God really is. Now, I'm going to ask you, did Jesus demonstrate fear?
No.
No.
Did he demonstrate hate?
No.
Did he demonstrate war and conflict?
No.
Did he demonstrate division? Now, I know someone's going to say, yeah, he said that I will divide mother and father. He was talking about from the Jewish culture point of view.
Yes.
That it was going to be a division on your loyalty. So, did he promote a particular political view? Now, there's people that will tell you, yes, he did. No, he did not.
Jesus promoted equality, forgiveness, and love.
Did Jesus condemn any group of people, with the exception of the religious leaders who held the people in bondage with fear tactics? Did he Did Jesus condemn any particular group of people?
No.
Because you're this race, you're this color, this gender, this you're automatically. No, he did not.
So think about it. Fear is a tactic man uses to control other people, to get what they want, money, power, and self-elevation into leadership. And to place that personality on God is to put him in the class of worst of human manipulative behavior. Yet you don't have to go far to find someone angrily proclaiming that this is who God is. Funny, though, that's not who Jesus said he is.
And that's a great statement.
It is.
And a great thought. I mean, this kind of goes back to, I may have mentioned this on another episode. Tracy sent me a little deal. I guess it was coming on Facebook or something. Mm-hmm. It was a picture of Jesus knocking on the locked door. We've all seen that, where Jesus is knocking on the door. But there was the titling under it said, he knocks on the door. Who is it? This is Jesus. What do you want? I want to come in. Why should I let you in? Because of what I'll do to you if you don't.
Yes. And if you think about it, I mean, that is sometimes the God that we promote.
Well, it's the God the Jews promoted, and Jesus came and died because he would not. He said, no, I'm who God is.
Mm-hmm.
This when I heal people that don't deserve to be healed, when I touch people that don't deserve, when I relieve the suffering of people regardless of their creed or who they are, and they could not.
If he had fallen right into the Jewish caste system, they would have adored him.
They would have embraced him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would have. Are we ready to conclude?
I believe we are.
Maybe it's time we became aware of just how much fear we're allowing to be subconsciously interjected into our lives. The, what will you do if this happens to you? Are you and your loved ones prepared? I mean, can you even turn on the television or anything without that? And what about seeing the humanity that brought us the Bible? It's only when we understand and see the humanity that we may discover the divine. God's still trying to rescue us from those primitive pagan impressions of an angry, unappeasable God to whom we must make sacrifices, and the sacrifices we make today will need to be doubled in the future or else we'll face the fear of him using his powers to bring us rain. I guess it comes down to, are you going to see God through the lens of what fearful men say about God, even those recorded in the Old Testament and parts of the Bible? Or are you going to see God through the lens of who Jesus came to demonstrate to us? And that's his true character and his true purpose, which, by the way, was quite contrary to the false image of the leaders of Jesus' day held. And they wanted this one who came teaching love, forgiveness, and peace for everyone to be killed. And we might take notice. No one was ever afraid to approach Jesus and ask him for anything. Nowhere. Mm-hmm. Oh, you could see it. They were kind of fear, and they were show homage, and Jesus would grab them and say, what is it you want?
Yeah.
Tell me what it is you want. They didn't have to bring him a sacrifice or an offering to gain his audience or his favor.
All right. So until next time, God's grace, peace, and love on each of you, our fellow seekers.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.